Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'll be reading to you today from Homer's Odyssey, and I'm beginning in Book 10. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Odyssey, Book 10. Remember where we are at. Odysseus is continuing to tell the story to the Phaeacians. He's with the Phaeacians. They're going to give him a boat and send him on his way and try and get him back to Ithaca, his own island. And they've asked him who he is. He identified himself, and they want to know the story. They don't even want to go to bed. They want to hear more. And so Odysseus is continuing his story, line one. We came next to the Aeolian island where Aeolus lived, Hippotas' son, beloved by the immortal gods, on a floating island. The whole enclosed by a rampart of bronze not to be broken, and the sheer of the cliff runs upward to it, and 12 children were born to him in his palace, 6 of them daughters and 6 sons in the pride of their youth. So he bestowed his daughters on his sons to be their consorts, and evermore beside their dear father and gracious mother these feast, and good things beyond number are set before them. And all their days the house fragrant with food echoes in the courtyard, but their nights they sleep each one by his modest wife under coverlets and on bedsteads corded for bedding. We came to the city of these men and their handsome houses, and a whole month he entertained me and asked me everything of Ilion, of Troy, line 15, and the ships of the Argives and the Achaeans' homecoming, and I told him all the tale as it happened. But when I asked him about the way back and requested conveyance, again he did not refuse, but granted me passage. He gave me a bag made of the skin taken off a 9-year ox, line 20, stuffed full inside with the courses of all the blowing winds, for the son of Cronos had set him in charge over the winds to hold them still or start them up at his pleasure. He stowed it away in the hollow ship, tied fast with a silver string so there should be no wrong breath of wind, not even a little, but set the west wind free to blow me and carry the ships and the men aboard them on their way. But it was not so to be, for we were ruined by our own folly. Nevertheless, we sailed on night and day for 9 days, and on the 10th at last appeared the land of our fathers, line 30, and we could see people tending fires. We were very close to them. But then the sweet sleep came upon me, for I was worn out with always handling the sheet myself, and I would not give it to any other companion, so we could come home quicker to our own country. But my companions talked with each other and said that I was bringing silver and gold home with me, given me by great-hearted Aeolus, son of Hippotas, and thus they would speak to each other, each looking at the man next him. See now, this man is loved by everybody and favored by all. Whenever he visits anyone's land and city and is bringing home with him handsome treasures taken from the plunder of Troy, while we, who've gone through everything he has on the same venture, come home with our hands empty. Now, too, Aeolus, in favor of friendship, has given him all these goods. Let us quickly look inside and see what is in there and how much silver and gold this bag contains inside it. Line 46. So he spoke, and the evil counsel of my companions prevailed, and they opened the bag, and all the winds burst out. Suddenly the storm caught them away and swept them over the water, weeping away from their own country. Then I, waking, pondered deeply in my own blameless spirit, whether to throw myself over the side and die in the open water, or wait it out in silence and still be one of the living. And I endured it and waited, and hiding my face I lay down in the ship, while all were carried on the evil blast of the storm wind back to the Aeolian island with my friends grieving. Line 56. There again we set foot on the mainland and fetched water, and my companions soon took their supper there by the fast ships. But after we had tasted of food and drink, then I took along one herald with me and one companion and went up to the famous house of Aeolus. There I found him sitting at dinner with his wife and with his own children. We came to the house beside the pillars, and on the doorstone we sat down. And their minds wondered at us, and they asked us, "What brings you back, Odysseus? What evil spirit has vexed you? We sent you properly on your way, so you could come back to your own country and house, and whatever else is dear to you." So they spoke, and I, though sorry at heart, answered, "My wretched companions brought me to ruin, helped by the pitiless sleep. Then make it right, dear friends, for you have the power." Line 70. So I spoke to them, plying them with words of endearment, but they were all silent. Only the Father found words and answered, O least of living creatures, out of this island, hurry! I have no right to see on his way, none to give passage to any man whom the blessed gods hate with such bitterness. Out! This arrival means you are hateful to the immortals. So speaking, he sent me, groaning heavily, out of his palace, and from there, grieving still at heart, we sailed on further. But the men's spirit was worn away with the pain of rowing and our own silliness, since homecoming seemed ours no longer. Line 80. Nevertheless, we sailed on night and day for 6 days, and on the seventh came to the sheer citadel of Lamus, Telepolis of the Lystragones, where one herdsman driving his flocks in hails another, who answers as he drives his flocks out, and there a man who could do without sleep could earn him double wages, one for herding the cattle, one for the silvery sheep. There the courses of night and day lie close together. There, as we entered the glorious harbor with a sky-towering cliff encloses it on either side, which with no break anywhere, and two projecting promontories facing each other run out toward the mouth, and there is a narrow entrance. There all the rest of them had their oar-swept ships in the inward part. They were tied up close together inside the hollow harbor, for there was never a swell of surf inside it, neither great nor small, but there was a pale comb on it. Line 95. I myself, however, kept my black ship on the outside, at the very end, making her fast to the cliff with a cable, and climbed to a rocky point of observation and stood there. From here no trace of cattle nor working of men was visible. All we could see was the smoke going up from the country. Line 100. So I sent companions ahead, telling them to find out what men, eaters of bread, might live here in this country. I chose 2 men and sent a third with them as a herald. They left the ship and walked on a smooth road where the wagons carried the timber down from the high hills to the city, and there in front of the town they met a girl drawing water. This was the powerful daughter of the Lystragonian Antiphates, who had gone down to the sweet running wellspring, Artiche, whence they would carry their water back to the city. My men stood by her and talked with her, and asked her who was king of these people and who was lord over them. She readily pointed out to them the high-roofed house of her father. But when they entered the glorious house, they found there a woman as big as a mountain peak, and the sight of her filled them with horror. At once she summoned famous Antiphates, her husband, from their assembly, line 115, and he devised dismal death against them. He snatched up one of my companions and prepared him for dinner, but the other two darted away in flight and got back to my ship. The king raised the cry through the city. Hearing him, the powerful Lystragones came swarming up from every direction, tens of thousands of them, and not like men, like giants. These, standing along the cliffs, pelted my men with man-sized boulders, and a horrid racket went up by the ships, of men being killed and ships being smashed to pieces. They speared them like fish and carried them away for their joyless feasting. Line 125. But while they were destroying them in the deep water harbor, meanwhile I, drawing from beside my thigh the sharp sword, chopped away the cable that tied the ship with the dark prow, and called out to my companions and urged them with all speed to throw their weight on the oars and escape the threatening evil. And they made the water fly, fearing destruction. Gladly, my ship, and only mine, fled out from the overhanging cliffs to the open water, but the others were all destroyed there. This is a good time to take a look back at Book 9, lines 534 and 535, to see that part of Polyphemus's curse is coming true. Line 133. From there, we sailed on further along, glad to have escaped death, but grieving still at heart for the loss of our dear companions. We came to Aiea, which is an island. There lived Circe of the lovely hair, the dread goddess who talks with mortals, who is own sister to the malignant-minded Aietes, for they both are children of Helios, who shines on mortals, and their mother is Perse, who in turn is daughter of Ocean. There we brought our ship in to the shore in silence, at a harbor fit for ships to lie, and some god guided us in. There we disembarked, and for 2 days and 2 nights we lay there, for sorrow and weariness eating our hearts out. But when the fair-haired dawn in her rounds brought on the third day, line 145, then at last I took up my spear again, my sharp sword, and went up quickly from beside the ship to find a lookout place, to look for some trace of people, listen for some sound. I climbed to a rocky point of observation and stood there, and got a sight of smoke which came from the halls of Circe, going up from wide wayed earth through undergrowth and forest. Then I pondered deeply in my heart and my spirit whether, since I had seen the fire and smoke, to investigate. But in the division of my heart, this way seemed the best to me, to go back first to the fast ship and the beach of the sea, and give my companions some dinner, then send them forward to investigate. But on my way, as I was close to the oar-swept vessel, some god, because I was all alone, took pity upon me and sent a great stag with towering antlers right in my very path. He had come from his range in the forest down to the river to drink, line 160. For the fierce strength of the sun was upon him. As he stepped out, I hit him in the middle of the back, next to the spine, so that the brazen spearhead smashed its way clean through. He screamed and dropped in the dust, and the life spirit fluttered from him. I set my foot on him and drew the bronze spear out of the wound it had made, and rested it on the ground, while I pulled growing twigs and willow withes, and braiding them into a rope, about 6 feet in length, and looping them over the feet of this great monster on all sides, both sides, lashed them together, and with him, loaded over my neck, went toward the black ship, propping myself on my spear, for there was no way to carry him on the shoulder, holding him with one hand, he was such a very big beast. I threw him down by the ship and roused my companions, standing beside each man and speaking to him in kind words. Dear friends, sorry as we are, we shall not yet go down into the house of Hades, line 175. Not until our day is appointed. Come then, while there is something to eat and drink by the fast ship, let us think of our food and not be worn out with hunger. So I spoke, and they listened at once to me and obeyed me, and unveiling their heads along the beach of the barren water, they admired the stag, and truly he was a very big beast. So apparently these men actually had their heads covered in mourning. Line 181. But after they had looked at him, and their eyes had enjoyed him, they washed their hands and set to preparing a communal high feast. So for the whole length of the day, until the sun's setting, we sat there feasting on unlimited meat and sweet wine. But when the sun went down, and the sacred darkness came over, then we lay down to sleep along the break of the seashore. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, then I held an assembly and spoke forth to all of them. Hear my words, my companions, in spite of your heart's sufferings. Line 190. Dear friends, for we do not know where the darkness is, nor the sunrise, nor where the sun who shines upon people rises, nor where he sets. Then let us hasten our minds and think, in other words, they're lost, and think whether there is any course left open to us. But I think there is none. For I climbed to a rocky place of observation and looked at the island, and the endless sea lies all in a circle around it, but the island itself lies low, and my eyes saw smoke rising in the middle through the undergrowth of the forest. So I spoke, and the inward heart in them was broken as they remembered Antiphates the Lystragonian and the violence of the great-hearted cannibal Cyclops, and they wept loud and shrill, letting the big tears fall, but there came no advantage to them for all their sorrowing. I counted off all my strong grieved companions into two divisions, and appointed a leader for each, I myself taking one, line 205, while godlike Eurylochus had the other. Promptly then we shook the lots in a brazen helmet, so they're casting lots, and the lot of great-hearted Eurylochus sprang out. He then went on his way, and with him two and twenty companions, weeping, and we whom they left behind were mourning also. In the forest glen they came on the house of Circe. It was in an open place, and put together from stones well polished, and all about it there were lions and wolves of the mountains, whom the goddess had given evil drugs and enchanted, and these made no attack on the men, but came up thronging about them, waving their long tails and fawning, in the way that dogs go fawning about their master when he comes home from dining out, for he always brings back something to please them. So these wolves, with great strong claws and lions, came fawning on my men, but they were afraid when they saw the terrible big beasts. Line 220. They stood there in the forecourt of the goddess with the glorious hair, and heard Circe inside singing in a sweet voice as she went up and down, a great design on a loom, immortal such as goddesses have, delicate and lovely and glorious their work. Now Polites, leader of men, who was the best and dearest to me of my friends, began the discussion. Friends, Someone inside, going up and down a great piece of weaving, is singing sweetly, and the whole place murmurs to the echo of it, whether she is woman or goddess. Come, let us call her. So he spoke to them, and the rest gave voice and called her. And at once she opened the shining doors and came out and invited them in, and all in their innocence entered. Only Eurylochus waited outside, for he suspected treachery. She brought them inside and seated them on chairs and benches and mixed them a potion with barley and cheese and pale honey added to Pramnian wine. This, if you remember way back when we were studying the Iliad, back in the Iliad, book 11, in lines 629 to 640, we had the same recipe. So she adds this pale honey to the Pramnian wine, but put into the mixture malignant drugs to make them forgetful of their own country. When she had given them this and they had drunk it down, next thing she struck them with her wand or her stick and drove them into her pig pens. And they took on the look of pigs, with the heads and voices and bristles of pigs, but the minds within them stayed as they had been before. So crying, or oinking, I suppose, they went in, and before them Circe threw down acorns for them to eat, and ilex and cornel buds, such food as pigs who sleep on the ground always feed on. Eurylochus came back again to the fast blast black ship, line 245, to tell the story of our companions and of their dismal fate, but he could not get a word out, though he was trying to speak, but his heart was stunned by the great sorrow, and both eyes filled with tears, he could think of nothing but lamentation. But after we had wondered at him and asked questions, line 250, at last he told us about the loss of his other companions. We went, O glorious Odysseus, through the growth as you told us, and found a fine house in the glen. It was in an open place and put together from stones well polished. Someone, a goddess or woman, was singing inside in a clear voice as she went up and down on her loom, and they called her and spoke to her, and at once she opened the shining doors and came out and invited them in, and all in their innocence entered. Only I waited for them outside, for I suspected treachery. Then the whole lot of them vanished away together, nor did one single one come out, though I sat and watched for a long time. So he spoke, and I slung my great bronze sword with the silver nails across my shoulders, and hung my bow on also, and told him to guide me back by the same way he had gone. But he, clasping my knees in both hands, entreated me, and in loud lamentation spoke to me and addressed me, "Illustrious, do not take me against my will there. Leave me here, for I know you will never come back yourself, nor bring back any of your companions. Let us rather make haste, and with these who are left escape, for we still may avoid the day of evil." Line 270. So he spoke, and I answered again in turn and said to him, Eurylochus, you may stay here eating and drinking, even where you are and beside the hollow black ship. Only I shall go, for there is strong compulsion upon me. So I spoke, and started up from the ship and the seashore. But as I went up through the lonely glens and was coming near to the great house of Circe, skilled in medicines, there, as I came up to the house, Hermes of the golden staff met me on my way, in the likeness of a young man with beard new grown, which is the most graceful time of young manhood. Line 280. He took me by the hand and spoke to me and named me, saying, Where are you going, unhappy man, all alone through the hilltops, ignorant of the land lay, and your friends are here in Circe's place in the shape of pigs and holed up in the close pig pens. Do you come here meaning to set them free? I do not think you will get back yourself, but must stay here with the others. But see, I will find you a way out of your troubles and save you. Here, this is a good medicine. Take it, and go into Circe's house. It will give you power against the day of trouble, and I will tell you all the malevolent guiles of Circe. Line 290. She will make you a potion, and put drugs in the food, but she will not even so be able to enchant you, for this good medicine which I give you now will prevent her. I will tell you the details of what to do. As soon as Circe with her long wand strikes you, then, drawing from beside your thigh your sharp sword, rush forward against Circe as if you were raging to kill her, line 295, and she will be afraid and invite you to go to bed with her. Do not then resist and refuse the bed of the goddess, for she will set free your companions and care for you also. But bid her swear the great oath of the blessed gods that she has no other evil hurt that she is devising against you, so she will not make you weak and unmanned once you are naked. So spoke Argiophontes, Hermes, and he gave me the medicine which he picked out of the ground, and he explained the nature of it to me. It was black at the root, but with a milky flower, line 305, the gods call it moly. It is hard for mortal men to dig up, but the gods have power to do all things. Then Hermes went away, passing over the wooded island, toward tall Olympus, and I, meanwhile, made my way to the house of Circe, but my heart was a storm in me as I went. Now I stood outside at the doors of the goddess with the glorious hair, and standing I shouted aloud, and the goddess heard me, and at once she opened the shining doors and came out and invited me in. And I, deeply troubled in my heart, went in with her. She made me sit down in a chair that was wrought elaborately and splendid with silver nails. Line 315, think of these nails on chairs and weapons as studs. Okay, splendid with silver nails, and under my feet was a footstool. She made a potion for me to drink and gave it in a golden cup, and with evil thoughts in her heart added the drug to it. Then, when she had given it, and I drank of it, without being enchanted, she struck me with her wand and named me. Go to your sty now and lie down with your other friends there. So she spoke. But I, drawing from beside my thigh the sharp sword, rushed forward against Circe as if I were raging to kill her. But she screamed aloud and ran under my guard, and clasping both knees, in loud lamentation spoke to me and addressed me in winged words. Line 325. What man are you, and whence? Where are your city and parents? The wonder is on me that you drank my drugs and have not been enchanted, for no other man beside could have stood up under my drugs. Once he drank, and they passed the barrier of his teeth, there's a mind in you no magic will work on. You are then resourceful Odysseus. Argiophontes, Hermes, of the golden staff was forever telling me you would come to me on your way back from Troy with your fast black ship. Come then, put away your sword in its sheath, and let us two go up into my bed, so that, lying together in the bed of love, we may then have faith and trust in each other. So she spoke, and I answered her again, and said to her, Circe, how can you ask me to be gentle with you, when it is you who turn my companions into pigs in your palace? And now you have me here yourself. You treacherously ask me to go into your chamber and go to bed with you, so that when I am naked you can make me a weakling, unmanned. I would not be willing to go to bed with you, unless you can bring yourself, O goddess, to swear me a great oath, so that there is no other evil hurt you devise against me. Line 345. So I spoke, and she at once swore the oath to me as I asked her, but after she had sworn me the oath and made an end of it, I mounted the surpassingly beautiful bed of Circe. Meanwhile, the four maidservants who wait on Circe in her house were busy at their work all through the palace. Line 350. These are daughters born of the springs and from the Caucasus and the sacred rivers which flow down to the sea. Of these, one laid the coverlets, splendid and stained in purple, over the backs of the chairs and spread on the seats the cloths to sit on. The second drew up the silver tables and placed them in front of the chairs and laid out the golden serving baskets upon them. The third mixed wine, kindly sweet and fragrant, in the silver mixing bowl and set out the golden goblets. The fourth one brought in water, then set about building up an abundant fire underneath the great cauldron, and the water heated. But when the water had come to a boil in the shining bronze, then she sat me down in the bathtub and washed me from the great cauldron, mixing hot and cold just as I wanted, and pouring it over shoulders and head to take the heart-wasting weariness from my limbs. When she had bathed me and anointed me with olive oil, line 365, she put a splendid mantle and a tunic upon me, and made me sit down in a chair that was wrought elaborately and splendid with silver nails, and under my feet was a footstool. A maidservant brought water for us and poured it from a splendid and golden pitcher, holding it above a silver basin for us to wash, and she pulled a polished table before us. A grave housekeeper brought in the bread and served it to us, adding many good things to it, generous with her provisions, and told us to eat. But nothing pleased my mind, and I sat there thinking of something else, mind full of evil imaginings. Line 375. When Circe noticed how I sat there without ever putting my hands out to the food, and with the strong sorrow upon me, she came close and stood beside me and addressed me in winged words. "Why, Odysseus, do you sit so, like a man who's lost his voice, eating your heart out, but touch neither food nor drink? Is it that you suspect me of more treachery, that you have nothing to fear, since I've already sworn my strong oath to you?" So she spoke, but I answered her again and said to her, "Oh, Circe, how could any man right in his mind ever endure to taste of the food and drink that are set before him, until with his eyes he saw his companions set free? So then, if you are sincerely telling me to eat and drink, set them free, so my eyes can again behold my eager companions." So I spoke, and Circe walked on out through the palace, holding her wand in her hand, and opened the doors of the pigsty and drove them out, line 390. They looked like 9-year-old porkers. They stood ranged and facing her, and she, making her way through their ranks, anointed each of them with some other medicine, and the bristles, grown upon them by the evil medicine Circe had bestowed upon them before, now fell away from them, and they turned back once more into men, younger than they had been and taller for the eye to behold, and handsomer by far. They recognized me, and each of them clung to my hand. The lovely longing for lamentation came over us, and the house echoed terribly to the sound. And even the goddess took pity, and she, shining among goddesses, came close and said to me, line 401, "Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, go back down now to your fast ship in the sand of the seashore, and, first of all, drag your ship up on the land, stowing your possessions and all the ship's running gear away in the sea caves, and then come back, and bring with you your eager companions." So she spoke, and the proud heart in me was persuaded, and I went back down to my fast ship in the sand of the seashore, and there I found beside the fast ship my eager companions, pitiful in their lamentation and weeping big tears. As a side note, little do they know what Odysseus has been doing. Line 410. And we have another Homeric simile or rhyme composition. "And as in the country the calves around the cows returning from pasture back to the dung of the farmyard, well filled with grazing, come camboling together to meet them, and the pens no longer can hold them in, but lowing incessantly they come running around their mothers, so these men, who once their eyes saw me, came streaming around me in tears, and the spirit in them made them feel as if they were back in their own country, the very city of rugged Ithaca, where they were born and raised up. So they came in tears about me and cried in winged words, 'Oh, great Odysseus, we are as happy to see you returning as if we had come back to our own Ithacan country. But come, tell us about the death of our other companions.' So they spoke, but I answered in soft words and told them, 'First of all, let us drag our ship up on the land, stowing our possessions and all the ship's running gear away in the sea caves, and then make haste, line 425, all of you to come along with me so that you can see your companions in the sacred dwelling of Circe, eating and drinking, for they have all in abundance.' So I spoke, and at once they did as I told them. Only Eurylochus was trying to hold back all my other companions, and he spoke to them and addressed them in winged words, 'Ah, poor wretches! Where are we going? Why do you long for the evils of going down into Circe's palace? For she will transform the lot of us into pigs or wolves or lions, and so we shall guard her great house for her under compulsion.' So, too, it happened with the Cyclops when our companions went into his yard, and the bold Odysseus was of their company, for it was by this man's recklessness that these two perished." So he spoke, and I considered in my mind whether to draw out the long-edged sword from beside my big thigh and cut off his head and throw it on the ground, even though he was nearly related to be my marriage. But my companions checked me, first one then another speaking, trying to soothe me. "Zeus sprung Odysseus, 'If you ask us, we will leave this man here to stay where he is and keep watch over the ship. You show us the way to the sacred dwelling of Circe.' So they spoke and started up from the ship in the seashore, nor would Eurylochus be left alone by the hollow ship, but followed along in fear of my fierce reproaches. Back to Circe's house. Meanwhile, inside the house, Circe with loving care bathed the rest of my companions and anointed them well with olive oil and put about them mantles of fleece and tunics, We found them all together, feasting well in the halls. When my men looked each other in the face and knew one another, they burst into an outcry of tears, and the whole house echoed. But she, shining among goddesses, line 455, came close and said to us, "Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, no longer raise the swell of your lamentation. I, too, know all the pains you have suffered on the sea, where the fish swarm, and all the damage done you on the dry land by hostile men. But come now, eat your food and drink your wine until you gather back again into your chests that kind of spirit you had in you when first you left the land of your fathers on rugged Ithaca. Now you're all dried out, dispirited from the constant thought of your hard wandering, nor is there any spirit in your festivity because of so much suffering." So she spoke, and the proud heart in us was persuaded. There, for all our days, until a year was completed, we sat there feasting on unlimited meat and sweet wine. But when it was the end of a year, and the months wasted away, and the seasons changed, and the long days were accomplished, then my eager companions called me aside and said to me, "What ails you now? It is time to think about our own country, if truly it is ordained that you shall survive and come back to your strong-founded house and to the land of your fathers." Line 475. So they spoke, and the proud heart in me was persuaded. So, for the whole length of the day, until the sun's setting, we sat there feasting on unlimited meat and sweet wine. But when the sun went down and the sacred darkness came over, they lay down to sleep all about the shadowy chambers. But I, mounting the surpassingly beautiful bed of Circe, clasped her by the knees and entreated her. And the goddess listened to me, and I spoke to her and addressed her in winged words. "O Circe, accomplish now the promise you gave, that you would see me on my way home. The spirit within me is urgent now, as also in the rest of my friends, who are wasting my heart away, lamenting around me when you are elsewhere." So when Circe is not around, the men just whine and complain and say, "Let's go home." And now that it's been a year, I guess it is time. Line 487. So I spoke, and she, shining among goddesses, answered, "Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, you shall no longer stay in my house when none of you wish to. But first there is another journey you must accomplish and reach the house of Hades and of revered Persephone, there to consult with the soul of Tiresias the Theban, the blind prophet, whose senses stay unshaken within him, to whom alone Persephone has granted intelligence even after death, but the rest of them are flittering shadows." This description of Hades in lines 491 through 495 is a good picture of Hades. Once the soul goes down to Hades, they are a shade or a shadow, and they are senseless. They know nothing. Persephone has granted to Tiresias, the blind prophet, that his senses he has kept. The others only if they drink part of the blood offering, where somebody digs a pit and pours the blood in there and they drink some of that down from Hades, only then can they have any sense in them. And now Circe is telling Odysseus, before he can get home, he has to make a trip to the underworld. Line 496. So she spoke, and the inward heart in me was broken, and I sat down on the bed and cried. Nor did the heart in me wish to go on living any longer, nor to look on the sunlight. But when I had glutted myself with rolling about and weeping, so he's having a little hissy fit, then at last I spoke aloud and answered the goddess, "Circe, who will be our guide on that journey? No one has ever yet in a black ship gone all the way to Hades." So I spoke, and she, shining among goddesses, answered, "Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, let no need for a guide on your ship trouble you. Only set up your mast pole and spread the white sails upon it, and sit still, and let the blast of the north wind carry you. But when you have crossed with your ship the stream of the ocean, you will find there a thickly wooded shore, and the groves of Persephone, and tall black poplars growing, and fruit-perishing willows. Then beach your ship on the shore of the deep eddying ocean, and yourself go forward into the moldering home of Hades." This mention of ocean in line 508 is, of course, Homer's Oceanus, which encircles the earth. And so Odysseus has been instructed to go farther than any man has. Go to the edge of ocean, beach it, and go on from there. Continuing in line 513. There, Pyriphlegethon and Cocytus, which is an offbreak from the water of the Styx, flow into Acheron. These are the four rivers of the underworld in lines 513 and 514. The four rivers of the underworld. Pyriphlegethon, my commentary tells me, means flaming with fire, and Cocytus means lamentation. The Styx, you know, means hateful, and Acheron means flowing with grief. Line 514. There is a rock there, and the junction of two thunderous rivers. This hero, you must go close in. There, hero, you must go close in and do as I tell you. Dig a pit of about a cubit in each direction, and pour it full of drink offerings for all the dead. First, honey mixed with milk, then a second pouring of sweet wine, and the third, water, and over all, then sprinkle white barley, and promise many times to the strengthless heads of the perished dead that, returning to Ithaca, you will slaughter a barren cow, your best, in your palace, and pile the pyre with treasures, and to Tiresias apart, dedicate an all-black ram, the one conspicuous in all your sheep flocks. But when with prayers you have entreated the glorious hordes of the dead, then sacrifice one ram and one black female, turning them toward Erebus, but yourself turn away from them and make for where the river runs. And there the numerous souls of the perished dead will come and gather about you. Then encourage your companions and tell them, taking the sheep that are lying by, slaughtered with the pitiless bronze, to skin these and burn them and pray to the divinities, to Hades the powerful, and to revered Persephone, line 535, while you yourself, drawing from beside your thigh the sharp sword, crouch there and do not let the strengthless heads of the perished dead draw nearer to the blood until you have questioned Tiresias. Then, leader of the host, the prophet, will soon come to you, and he will tell you the way to go, the stages of your journey, and tell you how to make your way home on the sea where the fish swarm. So she spoke, and dawn of the golden throne came on us, and she put clothing upon me, an outer cloak and a tunic, while she, the nymph, mantled herself in a gleaming white robe, fine woven and delightful, and around her waist she fastened a handsome belt of gold, and on her head was a wimple, while I walked all about the house and roused my companions. Standing beside each man and speaking to him in kind words, no longer lie abed and dreaming away in sweet sleep. The queenly Circe has shown me the way, so let us go now. So I spoke, line 550, and the proud heart in them was persuaded. Yet I did not lead away my companions without some loss. There was one, Elpenor, the youngest man, not terribly powerful in fighting, nor sound in his thoughts. This man, apart from the rest of his friends in search of cool air, had lain down drunkenly to sleep on the roof of Circe's palace, and when his companions stirred to go, he, hearing their tumult and noise of talking, started suddenly up, and never thought, when he went down, to go by way of the long ladder, but blundered straight off the edge of the roof, so that his neck bone was broken out of its sockets, and his soul went down to Hades. Now as my men were on their way, I said a word to them. Do you think you're on your way back now to your own beloved country? But Circe has indicated another journey for us, to the house of Hades and of revered Persephone, there to consult with the soul of Tiresias the Theban. And so, here line 565, Homer is telling the audience, the only way Odysseus can get home is to go find out the way, and Tiresias, who is in Hades, will give him the way. Back to 566. So I spoke, and the inward heart in them was broken. They sat down on the ground and lamented and tore their hair out, but there came no advantage to them for all their sorrowing. When we came down to our fast ship and the sand of the seashore, line 570, we sat down sorrowful and weeping big tears. Circe, meanwhile, had gone down herself to the side of the black ship, and tethered aboard it a ram and one black female, easily passing by us unseen. Whose eyes can follow the movement of a god passing from place to place, unless the god wishes? And so ends Book 10.